Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I know. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Thursday to you wherever you may be. As the introduction suggests, my name is indeed Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter at jwright929ESPN. Jeff Calkins is on the road, and he's going to join us here momentarily to tell you what's coming up on the rest of the program. Jonah Jordan's going to roll in here about 9:30. We will speak to Jonah. Some big news from the AAF's bankruptcy filing. We'll discuss everything that went wrong, as well as a few questions that we have about the AAF. Of course, big Grizzlies news. We'll discuss all of that with Chris Harrington at 10 o'clock when Chris joins us, then probably going to get Jeff back via the phone during the second half of the show. But now, without further ado, we welcome on the man that lends his name to the program. He, of course, is Jeff Calkins, joining us live from the road. Jeff, good day, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Off on a college trip with my middle son. And I'll be here for much of this hour, and then I'll be rejoining you for the second hour. I also want to hear, Jonah, about Memphis Tiger recruiting, which is, he's been writing extensively. James Wiseman had a great weekend. We'll do that as well. And of course, Chris Harrington at 10 o'clock. He has a piece up at the Daily Memphian, which I would urge you to read, on the Grizzlies situation and their recent hires. And then the NFL schedule came out, and we will talk about that in the second hour as well. You must be pumped that Baker Mayfield has four primetime games. It is Baker Mayfield, don't you think? I mean, it's Odell Beckham Jr. a little bit, but I think it is the Baker Mayfield effect. And he's a star, but B, he's good.
Yes, I definitely think that's a part of it. I'm skittish on the Browns this year. Because
Really? Name
a time that you've got a young, inexperienced head coach, and you've got a lot of personalities in that locker room.
Right, right. Well, we shall see.
Yes.
We shall see, and we shall talk about it in the second hour. In the meantime, the big news was the Grizzlies yesterday. They said they were going to be fortifying their front office and putting experienced NBA people around Zach Kleiman and Jason Wexler. And indeed, they have. They've hired two former GMs, Richie Cho, who we knew was coming, and Glenn Grunwald, who had worked for the Raptors and the Knicks. And there's yet more hires to come. That was obviously the big news. You can read about it again at the Daily Memphian. Chris has written about it. So here's my question: do you want to know what I like about it, or do you want to know what I don't like about it?
Let's
tell you both.
Okay, let's start with what you don't like about it first.
By the way, my overarching view on all of this is, which is true of everybody, like, it's funny. There's not many hires that have been made over the course of the 23 years that I have been here that I have been critical of at the outset, right?
Yes.
I try to be hopeful, right? And that's true whether it's Larry Porter, I was hopeful. Just be hopeful, right?
Sure.
Whether it's Josh Pastner, be hopeful. Whether it's Tick Price, be hopeful. My my general approach, even Tubby, and that was really hard to muster hope for because I didn't like it at the beginning. And then after he went to the opening press conference, I really didn't like it. If you read what I wrote, I didn't start killing it until he started screwing up, right? You just, like, you're hopeful. There are two instances where I was not. One, and truthfully, is that and I was not necessarily right. One was with Lionel. I was not, and I was wrong. And I was wrong about it. What bothered me about it was it felt like they were going cheap, right? It
yes.
felt like they gave Lionel literally a year and a half contract. And so I just, come on, man, really? Like, you gave him a year, the rest of the year and one more year. And so it felt like, at that point, Michael Heisley, I think, had already sold a first-round pick, which is, to me, the ultimate sin. You just don't sell a first-round pick, right?
Correct.
And so then you layer on top of it, and it turned out to be a great hire. And so, but generally my approach is, let's be hopeful. And my approach with this group fundamentally really is, let's be hopeful. I'm going to be hopeful, and I'm going to see what they do, and we'll evaluate it as it unfolds. And honestly, that's all they have ever asked. It's when we talked to Zach Kleinman, he said, just, you know, listen, judge us by what we do. And I don't expect any credit here or any credibility or anything else until you see what we do. But since you asked, I'll tell you what I like and what I don't like. Here are the things I don't like. One is, it is funny. Like, I joke that they've hired two more lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of staggering how much they're hiring people who look just like themselves, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, seriously, you have, and they're not all practicing lawyers now, right? And Daniel, I'm a lawyer. I think lawyers are generally smart people. I tend to be smart people. They tend to be analytical. They tend to be good communicators. They tend to be, I don't think it's disqualifying at all to be a lawyer, from lots of things. But it is what you want is diversity of thought in an organization, you would think, right? And so you have Jason Wexler, who's a former Ivy League lawyer. He's running for the show, okay? Then you have
Zach Kleinman,
who's a Duke lawyer, who's the second in command. You've got Joe Boddy, who is still involved from afar, who is a lawyer. You've got Rich Cho, who is honestly, he's also an engineer and a lawyer. And you've got Glenn Runwald, who is a lawyer. Like, it's unbelievable. Now, Glenn Runwald, to be totally fair, is not like the others. They're not all each identical to each other either, right? But Runwald is a legit basketball guy.
Yes.
Played at IU, Canada basketball. You can't say any more than Steve Young is also a lawyer. But you wouldn't say Steve Young isn't a football guy. He happens to be a lawyer,
or
too.
Or Chris Collinsworth.
Yeah, that's Grunwald. Grunwald is, by any definition, a basketball guy. He is not a cut from the same cloth. But you've got four guys who are basically kind of cut from the same cloth, right? And so I do want diversity of thought. And so to the extent that that's true, that just worries me a little bit, right? Not in a major fashion, but that worries me a little bit.
I don't know what you're talking about. Cho went to Pepperdine, so I've got to give him credit.
That's true. Secondly, if you have, if you look at the record of these guys, there are things in there that concern you, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you look at Rich Cho and some of the contracts he handed out. One of the reasons that everyone talked about how easy it would be trade to Mark to Charlotte was because there was all kinds of bad contracts that could have been shipped the other way.
Correct.
Like, it was literally, we said, when Chris Harrington used to talk about Charlotte, it was like, well, there's lots of options there. And then the draft record, it's Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was a number two pick, and
uh-huh.
Noah Vonleh was a top 10 pick, and Teller was a top 10 pick, and he did pick Kemba Walker. But this also, however, so and then and large, is celebrated for the stuff he did in New York. Like, people thought, if you read about Grunewald, he's highly celebrated. And people think that forcing him out for Steve Mills, which is what happened in New York, was a dramatic mistake by the Knicks. But he's he did the Bargnani deal, which didn't work out well. But any executive is going to have bad deals,
for sure.
Right? Any and in the defense of Rich Cho, you don't know who did what there.
No, I mean, Michael Jordan has a history.
Jordan is Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
So, you asked me first. You told me to lead with the stuff that worries me, all right? So
yep.
I'm leading with the stuff that worries me. So that worries me. And then the third thing that I just think is weird is that both of these dudes were already working for the Grizzlies. I just literally happened to Google, because I'm on the road, but I happened to Google Glenn Grunewald,
mm-hmm.
and there's a story last August that comes up that he is – resigned his position at McMaster University to work for the Grizzlies. And it turns out that, according to Chris Harrington, Rich Cho was also consulting with the Grizzlies. And so, first of all, I guess you could ask, how much is new? Actually think, so Robert Pera, who's the head of the decision-making tree, that's new. That's not new, right? He's still head of the decision-making tree. And then basically everybody else who was there was already there.
Yes.
So how new is this? My answer would be, I actually think it is going to be new. I think they're committed to having new processes. And so that part of it doesn't bother me as much as this is what I think is odd. Why didn't they tell us those people were consulting? Like, the Grizzlies have become suddenly a secretive organization.
100% agree with you.
They're a weirdly paranoid.
Yes, they feel like an SEC football program.
Like it used to be the opposite. I mean, and maybe to a fault. Chris Wallace used to be on the radio in regular spots twice a week, right? Where
yes.
he would be on, and what it feels like to me now is they just carefully shape everything. They have their own internal media. Why wouldn't you tell us that Glenn Grunewald, it was right in the Toronto Star, and then the way they botched the firing thing.
Yes.
I just think they've become a bizarrely closed, weirdly paranoid organization. Like, it's just bizarre to me. Like, it turns out that Rich Cho and Glenn Grunewald were both working for the Grizzlies all along.
Yeah.
And literally it was in the public record, the Toronto paper. So those are the things that I just think that's weird. Like, I don't understand that. I don't understand. Like, it used to feel like the Grizzlies were just enmeshed in the, whether they were good or for ill, enmeshed in the community, right?
Yes, 100%.
Now it feels like they're just interested in manipulating the message. I find that weird to me, honestly. Like, when I stumbled upon that, I'm like, what in the world? like Glenn Grunewald has been consulting and it's been out there all along. And they announced when they reorganized last summer, like, why didn't they announce these two guys? Or was this like a silent coup that's been planning all along? I got no idea. It's just weird to me.
The only thing I would ask is, are maybe we as, if the information was public, are we maybe as media members, or should we have seen that?
Yes, it is weird. Like, no one saw it. Yes, we should have seen it. We could have seen it. There's no question about that, too.
But you're right. They didn't. They certainly did not offer that information up.
I just think it's peculiar. That's all. I think it's become peculiar. And I think, honestly, like, I think the way that they did their PR for, they don't do press conferences anymore, you know? Like, I just find them to be odd. It's just an odd, I just think their communications are odd now. I don't know why. I just think it's odd.
Is it
legendarily secretive? I mean, we know this all the time with injuries. I mean, you know, basically it's Woj, and they announce everything they want to announce through Woj, including the fact that their players are being traded and, are on the market. which is also unusual. And so, but you asked me to start with what I didn't like about it. Here's what I do like about it. Yesterday we were talking about how Bobby Marks was on with Jason and John and said that this is amateur hour, Bobby Marks said. You cannot say that any longer. Like, if you were saying that before, which was premature to say that because you didn't – they had already said they were going to hire more people, right? And so I thought it was only fair to say, let's see who they hire. These are whatever you think of them or whatever you think of their record. You can't say either of these dudes are amateur hour.
Completely agree.
Not even close.
No, these are professional basketball. These are experienced.
Literally, they got two general managers in order. I mean, it's exactly what you would want. If you go with the decision to hire Zach Kleiman, who is admittedly young, and it says that, and I find that admirable, that he is, then what you do is you surround him with experienced people, and this is nothing if not experienced people. I mean, just take them one after the other. So there's Rich Cho, who I honestly, if it weren't for the duplication of the lawyer thing, is just mostly funny to me, right?
Yes.
But like, that's an accomplished dude. He's an engineer, so he's obviously great at numbers and math and all that stuff, right? He's he has a law degree, which is a wildly different type of experience. He worked in Oklahoma City, which was considered a absolutely cutting edge, perfectly beautifully run franchise. So he got experience there. He then was general manager of Portland, which is just had a bizarre falling out with Paul Allen. Like after 9 months, he got canned. It was stunning. And that was only because of personality. He actually, no one criticizes the deals that he made there before he was fired. It was just some odd personality conflict with Paul Allen, and then has been in Charlotte for basically the better part of a decade, where, yes, some bad things happen, but some good things happen too, including the drafting of Kemba Walker, and we don't know who's responsible or whatever. But you cannot say that Rich Cho is amateur hour. You just can't. He's a deeply experienced former general manager who's basically, and it is sort of interesting, coming back here to work for his intern, which I think shows you the respect that he has for Zach Kleiman, right?
Yes,
it would
100%.
Be as if, with all due, like, you're not my intern, but if in 10 years you were running a radio thing and I said, Jeffrey, can I just come work for you? It would indicate that I hold you in high regard, which of course I do, right? But in order to say, I'm going to go work for this dude who used to be my intern when he was at Duke Law School, and by the way, that's a great story. Zach Kleiman used to, like, commute hours in order to work in Charlotte. I think, A, it speaks really highly of Zach Kleiman that he wants to do it, and, B, you just can't say that's amateur hour. That is not – whatever you think of Rich Cho, he is a deeply experienced NBA executive, and he's moving here. He's investing himself in the community. He's got a very entertaining food blog, and he's a pickleball champion. And I don't know how you can't
– And, again, a Pepperdine guy.
What?
And a Pepperdine guy.
And a Pepperdine guy. Mm-hmm. So – and honestly, I think he's in some ways the less impressive of the two.
I agree.
Because Glenn Grunwald is he's responsible for Vince Carter in Toronto. He's responsible for Chris Bosh in Toronto. He at the Knicks again was widely respected. He is a former basketball player at IU who is a basketball guy who is. Exactly what you would want is a really highly regarded around the league, and is working as chosen to work with the Grizzlies, and so I don't know how you can. When they made their change, which people thought was controversial, and it's different. Like, it's different than just saying, here, David Griffin, you'd go build an organization as yours, right?
Correct.
This is a. But it's also what Robert Parrish always talked about. It's talked about a collaborative, lots of smart people in the room. and that's what they have. And as sports fans, we sort of gravitate towards the Danny Ainge, kingmaker, decision maker, you're the dude, right?
Correct.
Model. And that's easier for us to understand, easier for us to know who to hold responsible, et cetera. But when they made this change and elevated Zach Kleiman and elevated Jason, what those two promised is that they would get other smart people, and they would build, and they would surround themselves with deeply experienced basketball executives. And I think you have to say they have. I mean, there's no question they have, right? I mean, again, I don't know how it's going to work one way or another. We'll see what they get from Mike Conley. We'll see what they get, see what happens in the draft. It'll work better if they get Zion Williamson. It's sort of funny to think about it. Rich Cho was in the lottery the year of Anthony Davis, right?
Yes.
And so there's luck again.
Yes.
And he got the second pick. And that's Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was supposed to be a stud in a different kind of a way, right? But not – everyone knew that was a one-person draft.
Oh, yeah.
And if he had gotten Anthony Davis, he would likely still be in Charlotte.
100%.
I mean – yeah, he'd likely still be in Charlotte. And who knows? Like, Anthony Davis may not be asking to be traded. Like, he might have successfully built around Anthony Davis. So much of this is luck. And obviously, if the Grizzlies get lucky in the lottery, things will change dramatically. But I had the quibbles that I mentioned at the beginning. But fundamentally, A, I come from this back to where I started. I work for things to work out, and I hope for the best, and I certainly will with this organization. And I think it was well past time for change. And then beyond that, to me, they've done what they promised. And isn't that at least reassuring, if not impressive, at least reassuring that they said we were going to do this, and we've gone and done it. And I actually think I think it speaks well of Zach Kleiman that both Glenn Grunwald and Rich Cho, who worked with Kleiman when he was a young pup, now, I mean, you can be cynical and say are willing to take checks from him, but now are really willing to link their careers to him, particularly Rich Cho, who's moving here with his wife and daughters to Memphis, Tennessee. I think it speaks well of Zach Kleiman. I fundamentally thought yesterday was a good day for the Grizzlies.
I guess I do too, but I guess the cynic would say, well, now that all this information's coming out, doesn't this feel like another example that they're trying to essentially move titles around, but this feels more like a show of a reorganization than actually reorganization?
I don't actually believe that. I can see why people would say that, given that literally every one of these people was involved, right?
Correct.
Every one of these people, it turns out, unbeknownst to us, both Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald were involved. And we do know that Zach Kleiman had a more active role as the year went on. And so what do? They fired Bickerstaff. They sent Chris Wallace on an extended scouting mission. And they sent John Hollinger back to Atlanta, where he will be doing other analysis. But basically, everyone who was on board, and so all they've done is shuffle titles and nothing has changed. I don't really believe that. I do believe that Chris Wallace he wasn't the decider. Like, there was no decider except for Robert Pera, right? But he was deeply involved in the decision-making tree. And he just was. He was involved in the decision-making tree. And I think what they are committed to is there's no question that they reach for people with whom they are comfortable, right? There's no question about that.
Yes.
And you can fault them for that if you want. They don't have whatever. They're not willing to say, let's just go interview seven people and hire the best dude.
Right.
And that was even true for the head coach last time. Who did they hire? They hired the coach with whom they were comfortable. And
in fairness, this is not a unique thing to the Memphis Grizzlies. For God's sakes, we see it all the time in the NFL. We see it often. I mean, this is a thing in sports. Like,
but I do believe this. I believe that they really do recognize ways in which, now maybe their processes were not up to NBA, current modern NBA standards. And I really do believe that turning Zach Kleiman from a, hey, you know, go deal with contracts and collective bargaining stuff, right, into a guy who is running the show, I don't think that's just let's just say that at 92.9, what we did was we told Brad, hey, Brad, thanks for your service. This is just, by the way, a hypothetical, okay? Brad, thanks for your service. You're now on the promo team, and we're going to send you out to grocery stores on Saturday to hand out koozies and stuff. And Jeffrey, you are now in charge of programming the station, making the hires, deciding what goes on at 92.9, mm-hmm. right?
Sell the stock immediately.
You could say that, same people are involved. It's Brad and Jeffrey. They're still there. Like, everyone's still there. Everyone who was there. But I would venture to say that your imprint on the station, good or evil, would be different than Brad's. And so I don't think just because it's the same people are involved, it means that it is purely titles shifting around, nothing has changed. I think it is titles have shifted around, but I think job descriptions have titled around. I think they're committed to having processes change. I think there's going to be more hires yet to come. And so I don't actually think this is – I understand why people would say that, because it's all the same people. And you do wonder. Like, I would love to know what the hell happened with Justin Holliday. Okay, so now we know Rich Cho was consulting, right? We know Glenn Grunwald was consulting. We know Zach Kleiman was doing personnel stuff. We know who decided to send 2 second-round picks to Chicago for Justin Holliday. Like, what in the world? Like, literally everyone was here, and who decided that? Was that renegade Chris Wallace just making that deal? I don't know. Like, I there are parts of this that are curious to me. I suspect that their involvement, that Rich Cho's involvement when you're consultant, is very different than when you're here, moved in, living in the city, rolling up your sleeves. One way you have a discreet, hey, go determine what the best practices are around the league for this kind of thing, right? And one way you're intimately involved in personnel decisions. I think Rich Cho's, even though he's been on board, I think his job description changes. So I don't actually think it's just cosmetic. That is not how it strikes me, that it would just be cosmetic. I think this is, whether it'll work or not remains to be seen, but I really do believe this is a commitment to a different philosophical approach on the part of the Grizzlies. Do I have some concerns? Sure, of course I do. But will I hope for the best? Yes. It was yesterday, I think, fundamentally a good day for the franchise. I think yesterday was fundamentally a good day for the franchise. I do want to tell you, by the way, it could be a good day for you if you get yourself out to sleep in these mattress and furniture by Michael Zellner. You will have a better night's sleep. Your whole life will be blissful. I won't oversell it, but I think that's true. A, because you're going to get 50 to 80% off retail store prices. B, because you mentioned my name, Jeff Calkins, you will get an additional 10% off. But C, because you'll come home with a beautiful, fantastic mattress, which is, you know, I talk about with Cooper Systems, what do you use every day? What do you use every day? You use your laptop every day.
Every what else do you use single every day? Day.
You use your bed. Your bed. It might as well be a bed that is comfortable and that assures you a good night's sleep. And that is what you can get at Sleepy Seas Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner. They've been named the best mattress store in the city for 4 straight years. They've got the best names in mattresses, so Serta, iComfort, Simmons Beauty Rest. Just lie down on them. just go in there and lie down and go, you'll feel better about everything, including the Grizzlies management. Sleepy Seas, there's all kind of financing options available up to 48 months. And again, I said before, if you mention my name, Jeff Calkins, an additional 10% off anything in the store. Sleepy Seas is located at 2790 Kirbywin Road at the corner of Summer Avenue, right next to Hollywood Feed. Give Michael a call, 901-692-6200. Sleepy Seas, my Michael Zellner. We never wake up on the wrong side of the bed. All right, so Jonah Jordan is going to join us next, and we'll get Chris Harrington's thoughts on all of this. And I will be rejoining the program as well later on. I will tell you as well, Jeffrey, my story on coaching the Memphis Tiger football team is up. And if you want, I'll be listening. But if you want a unvarnished opinion as to how it went, from Jonah Jordan, I accept you asking him about that, and I take whatever criticisms he will level in the spirit with which they are intended.
Mm-hmm. You so can rest assured. Rest assured, I will be asking.
Yeah. Jonah Jordan, and then Chris Harrington, and I will be back. We'll talk a little NFL football schedule as well. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
So I looked out my window this morning, and I half expected to see Tiger Woods walking across my lawn, or Rory McIlroy, because that's how good it looked. It felt honestly like Augusta. It is amazing the impact that Jameson Lawn has had already on my lawn. If you drive past, it's astonishing because I've now had it mowed and edged and everything else mulched down, and the transformation of my lawn is already obvious. It was like, where's Tiger and his red mock turtleneck? It looks that good. And they can do that for you. They've been doing it since 1939. It is a local company. They know what they're doing. They're deeply invested in the community, and they will make your lawn look spectacular. Give them a call, 452-1505, 452-1505, or on the web at jamesonpest.com. I now turn the proceedings over to Jeffrey. I was going to talk to our friend Jonah Jordan from the Daily Memphis.
Appreciate it, Jeff. Safe travels. Enjoy the college visit. That is Jeff Calkins. Joining me now, though, as he said, is Jonah Jordan, of course, of the Daily Memphis, at underscore Jonah Jordan on Twitter. Okay, let's start first here, Jonah. Let's start with, now that he's no longer with us, let's talk behind his back.
Yes, absolutely.
He's got to be listening on that radio.com app. Right?
So he has written over at the Daily Memphian. He has written about his coaching debut. You were live there in person. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate it?
Do we even get to count it? Because it was, in all honesty, Brady White called the plays.
Well, Jeff had the headset on.
But I got a video. I actually got two videos of Jeff holding the play sheet and Brady White pointing to what plays they were supposed to be calling. I mean,
listen, if I learned anything from covering Hugh Freeze for 5 years, it doesn't matter if someone else called the play. You're taking credit for
it. Is the defense better now? Is that what we're saying?
Oh, yeah. Defense is definitely better.
I thought we moved the ball. We've been preaching all camp. I was telling Jeff, this is the official statement. We've been preaching all camp this spring about ball security.
Yeah.
Move the ball.
Yeah, this
turned
is
it over three times.
He did move the ball in the first drive, and then he wrote today, if you read what he wrote, he messed up because he couldn't hear the play call that Brady White wanted.
No, I think Brady actually pointed to one thing, and then Jeff thought he pointed to another and called the other.
This is Jeff playing coordinator at the spring game, by
this
the way.
This is what I told him. I was concerned about the readers that he was using, his reading glasses. It looked like from the video that I saw, like, this is the thing. This is why Gruden does deserve some credit. he wears those Snap-on readers.
The Snap-ons, yep.
That hang on his thing, because that way he's ready to go with his play
sheet.
They
clip in the middle, right?
Right. Yeah. We don't know what Jeff could have thought easily that Brady was pointing at outside zone on third and eight?
I think it was third and six. It was either third and six or second and six.
Everyone runs outside zone on third and six. That's a common play call.
52-yard field goal, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Settling for a 52-yarder was bold. I would agree.
It was questionable, but I will say I thought he did fine. He did have a tough hand. He was playing with the fourth string quarterback, so it was kind of tough.
And more importantly, when you're playing with, like, as you and I have talked about, in the world of football, there are only so many good offensive linemen, particularly on a team.
Oh, yeah.
When you're getting deep into the reserve offensive linemen, that's when
it, Jarvis was smart to just blitz everyone.
Every play. Okay, so let's go from there. Let's get your overall impressions, though, now that the spring has ended. How much stock do you put in spring practice?
Not a ton.
Okay, good.
I put more stock in demeanor, kind of. Demeanor, how people are acting, how people are taking coaching, than anything. Because tomorrow, some guy who played awesome yesterday could be gone. They could transfer. You know?
Like, oh, there's no question.
So I've been watching Brady White especially because...
Oh, that was going to be that's what it really boils down to.
I watched him a ton. I've watched him, a lot. He just seems happier. And at times last year, he seemed, I wouldn't say not happy, but you could still tell. He was going through that first-year quarterback thing where it's a new team that had been under Riley Ferguson. He's the new guy. He came in and kind of just... He had to take over a starting role, and it was a process. And it finally looks like, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were like, everybody around here loves him. It wasn't not that people didn't like him. It was just that it took a while for people to accept him, I think, and that seems to be done. And it seems like the other day, he stood behind the media and was messing with DeMonte Coxey. Absolutely not something he would have done all year. The other day, he smiled through an entire interview. Didn't happen once last year. It's a lot. It's a lot different.
Yeah, I know you've discussed it ad nauseum on the show. I believe you've even written about it. The similarities between Brady's first year and Riley Ferguson's first year are there. I also think there's one key aspect. Like, unless you have a guy that is... unless you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers when he was at Cal. Unless you have a guy that's just a special, makes the team better kind of quarterback... Most of these guys are going to be about as effective as what is around them. I would imagine Riley Ferguson's numbers would not have looked nearly as good if he didn't have Anthony Miller.
That is correct. Well,
Anthony Miller's a bailout.
Yeah, and he threw to him so much. And, you know, he went in the second round of the draft for a reason.
Yeah.
It was a guy he could throw to. But also, like, let's not get it twisted. I mean... Phil Mayhew was great.
Sure.
All those other receivers he had, like, he had guys on that team he could throw
to. No, that's my point, is that I think part of Brady's struggles are, listen, you can underthrow a deep ball and have Anthony Miller come back and make a ridiculous play, because I think one of his biggest strengths was his ability to track the football in the air, make adjustments instantaneously, and just catch the football. Like, that is a skill, and it... No one really pays attention to whether or not a throw was on the money. Like, I think most of the criticism of Brady last year was unfair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think his problem was that he won't admit this. Nobody around there will admit this, is that he heard it. He heard the criticism. You can't throw deep. You can't throw deep. You can't throw deep. And he started forcing things. He started forcing the issue, doing things that he hadn't been doing all season. They've been working with him a lot in this camp. Norvell took him aside the other day and was like, you are thinking too much. Like, they love the mind that he has. They love how smart he is. But sometimes he thinks too much. He overdoes it. And, you know, he just needs to calm down. And I think he has. He has stopped listening to all that stuff. Because you could even see, we talked about it. I think you even texted me during the Wake Forest game. It was like he had guys that were... If you make the simple play, it's a first down, but he's going for the home run shot.
Because he kept hearing, like, he can't throw a deep ball. He can't throw a deep ball. He can't throw a deep ball. I was like, I'll show you. I'll throw a deep ball.
Yeah.
That was speculation, but I feel like that was fairly accurate.
That didn't lose them that game, I don't think, but it certainly didn't help them didn't help matters.
Okay, we're going to get into the AAF stuff momentarily, but okay, so now that we look at Tiger basketball recruiting, let's switch gears a little bit. And things seem to be, particularly with Precious Achiuwa, seem to be going well. I'm not going to put you on the spot, so I'll say it. Is this recruitment weird?
I think so. Like, it's because everybody that around, like, there are people who think he's going to Kansas. There's people think he's going to North Carolina. There are people think he's going to UConn. There are people think he's going to Georgia. And there's people that think he's going to Memphis. Like, that's a pretty wide range of schools you have there.
And he can only go to one, best I can tell.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's all over the place. It's all over the map. Like, Memphis is in there. They're fighting hard. It's going to last until, I bet it goes into next month, unless maybe Memphis can lock it down. I think it'd be difficult to get him to commit on a visit. Kids usually a lot don't do that these days, especially this time of the year. So, with a kid like Achiuwa, he's not going to commit on a visit. So, it's going to be, I mean, it's tough. The kid's good, and they're fighting for him, but, I mean, it's a weird deal. Like, I'm glad, I'm one of the few people that's, I mean, you are the, you're one of the few people I've talked to about it that it's so weird to
me. Again, I don't have clearly the same recruiting contacts that most people that cover the Tigers here do. I mean, a lot of their sources are from the program, which is who they should be talking to because that's the program that they cover. But I've talked to a lot of people that know that I trust in the recruiting game. And to a man, everyone just goes, if someone tells me they know for certain where he's going, I would like to have a conversation with him because he said, one of the big guys I was talking to basically like, every school thinks they've got him.
Yeah.
And only one can get him. Okay, so in terms of, let's talk more big picture. How many guys do you think they end up adding to this class, either be it grad transfers or high school commits? How many guys do you think, how many new names do you think we'll see?
I think they could go up to 4.
Would that put them in any weird situation in terms of, I'll ask a question that I don't feel like is being asked fairly enough, in terms of APR?
So, I think you can do 4 without going and adding any more transfers, or without anybody transferring out. You could take Jaden Hardaway off of scholarship, and that adds another scholarship to the mix, and you'll be fine APR-wise. I think graduating 4 or 5 guys this year helps. I think they went back and they had a couple other guys graduate that had transferred, which helps. But it is, I mean, they're in a tough spot APR-wise. It is something they're having to he's had to juggle since he got here. And it's not necessarily fair to him because it wasn't his fault. But then he had, what was it last year, like 4 or 5 guys transfer.
Sure.
Which a lot of those guys may not end up like, I don't know. David Nickelberry committed to Idaho, but I don't know if he's going to finish there.
Sure. And in fairness, there are other ways. You know, John Calipari was famous for getting around the APR. Like, if you bring back someone to work on towards their degree that's left the program, I believe like, you can even, like, I think it's up to a decade from the program that you can bring someone back. So there are ways around it, but I do think that is an interesting aspect, especially when you're trying to, shall we say, rebuild a roster overnight?
Yeah, you're really having to rebuild. Like, you're having to reload pretty quickly here. Okay, I wouldn't say that they're in a tough spot because you've got so many good guys coming in and there's so many targets out there. There's so many kids out there you could go get. But if you strike out on all of these guys, which I don't think he will. I don't think he will at all. You're in a really, like, strange position that could ultimately, if you have to take 2-3 grad transfers, that could have more implications next year.
Do you think there would be some wisdom in maybe focusing on the grad transfers? Because, as you pointed out, this is going to be a young team. Do you think adding someone who is experienced, even if it's not experienced with your team, do you think that is a beneficial add?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what was it? I went back the other day and looked. It was you have Isaiah Maurice, Tyler Harris, David Winget, Lance Thomas, and I think that's it coming back from last year's team. Is that it?
Yeah, I think of the guys
that played.
Right, of the guys that you would expect.
So you're not really looking at a wealth of NCAA experience. I think you only have one I know for a fact you only have one guy who's played multiple years of Division I basketball. So
they were really high on Wingett. Is he a good player?
He's hurt all year. I think they were kind of like, he got hurt, and they were like, well, we don't want to waste half a year of eligibility or whatever it would be when he finally got healthy enough to play. So they were like, let's just medically redshirt him. Everybody I've talked to who's watched him during practice says he could be better or as good of a shooter as Tyler Harris. Mm.
And he's longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
Madness was going on, people were stoked about him.
Yeah. He played 22 minutes and was like 0 of 5, 0 of 6 from the field. I think he made 1 of 6. He had a dunk. But it was generally he never got going, and then he got hurt and it was done.
Yeah. To me, that's not an unusual story. Like, that's something you'll see where a guy that it's not like he. I don't feel like his playing this year was paramount to him his having a successful career.
Exactly. So, like, and they didn't absolutely think, like, oh, man, if we had David, everything would be different. I think that conversation was, oh, man, if we had Lance Thomas, things would be a lot different.
Correct.
But that's a whole different situation.
I forgot about him. He's coming, too.
Yeah. And then topic number three. So the AAF has filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. And for the first time, I believe this is the first time that Charlie Ebersole has been on the record speaking publicly. Boy, he gave some interesting answers.
Oh, I didn't see this.
So
what did he say?
He spoke with the Sports Business Journal, and basically, I know you find this hard to believe, but Charlie is a big look-in-the-mirror kind of guy, and that ain't the problem.
Oh, I'm shocked.
Let's start first on why the league failed.
These are good quotes.
Yes. Quote, I know everyone has conspiracy theories, but unfortunately this may have just died because the main investor and the founders had different visions of what the company was supposed to be. Our long-term vision for building something slowly and getting enterprise value was not aligned with Tom Dundon's vision of how he saw the league. Well, if you're trying to build slowly, Charlie, then why did you rush to be the first to market?
Yeah, I'm so... Like, nothing they say ever actually adds up, ever. It never adds up in any case.
On accusations that he misrepresented the league's financing, quote, we raised over $170 million in the second quarter of last year. We ultimately raised well over $200 million before the launch of the league. When it became clear that our primary investor was not able to do or not performing in line with the signed contracts, which had been vetted by multiple banks, we went out to the market after the success of the first weekend and offered to let other people buy in. Ultimately, Tom made an offer to buy in. Okay, this is where I think he's wrong. Like, I understand. He says we raised over $170 million. And this is what has always driven me insane about fundraising. Until the check is in the bank.
Well,
and his argument is, well, we had contracts with Nike. It's like, you don't have the money.
On this radio station, I believe he said that they didn't need any extra money because the TV contract was going to cover the first year.
And that's another fascinating one.
Well, I'm so confused about all of this because why did you have to borrow so much money if you had so much money already in the bank? And the TV contracts don't make any sense either.
He didn't have money in the bank. All he
had
was
money.
He had promises. And he would argue he had contracts. But doesn't matter. Like,
well,
you don't have the money.
This is why people are saying that McMahon has at least a shot to get through year one and probably year two because he's fronting all the money.
Oh, yeah. No, he sold his own
cash.
Stock.
Yeah, he's got $500 million.
Hey, this is Birmingham Iron had $43 in the bank.
Literally 43.
Wow. I'm surprised they had that. That's shocking.
I bet you I have more.
My son has more in his bank.
Yeah, I have more money in this big can of quarters that I have that I've just been putting loose change in for the last 5 years of my life.
Can we, if they're part of chapter, the problem is it wasn't a franchise model. It was a league model. So I don't think we could actually go and just write a check for $50 and tell them to keep the change, which would be bad. Kind of be an awesome move. The problem is I think the league owns the team, but what is remarkable to me, though, is the TV deals. Because you start reading, as Jonah says, nothing adds up about the TV deals. But clearly what had happened is they weren't paying CBS to broadcast the games, but CBS was clearly
not... It's like a trade deal.
Like CBS wasn't paying them up front. See, I think if you made me speculate and guess, what occurred is they had a splitting of the advertising deal.
If you don't mind, read the two quotes about the hotel payment and then the player reimbursement for injury stuff.
Players were fraudulently charged for their hotel rooms. We have worked very closely with a lot of those players to get them all paid back by the hotels because the hotels should not have charged them. The hotels were paid.
Now, see, there are vendors, and I can just tell you straight up, I know this to be a fact. Not all vendors have been paid. That's just true.
Well, there's no question.
We know this firsthand.
How many of us have stayed in hotels?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've got a pretty extensive track record of when I paid my bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's either paid or it's not paid.
Right. They're not really in the business of scamming you because of how big they are.
It's not somebody sitting over at the Royal Sonesta like, oh, the AAF paid.
Right.
Bailed. Well, I'm going to charge this kid.
And on top of that, hotels are generally successful if they get repeat customers.
Right.
So.
And there are many vendors that are in the same situation.
They're not trying to just scam someone out of money one time so that they can. And then lastly, on the injured players. Quote, that is absolutely not true on whether or not they were having to pay for their own rehab. Our team reached out to every single player, that seems unlikely, that was injured during the season and walked them through all of their workers' comp options. Again, seems wildly unlikely. And their HR options and their medical options. We have the necessary insurance so all the players are covered.
This is the same league that was granting players permission to go to the NFL after their players already were going to go to the NFL.
Yeah. No, well, by the way, all of that language is CYA. That is just cover your ass language.
Right.
That is like,
they're getting
we
sued.
Went through,
they're totally
exactly.
getting sued.
Exactly.
I can't imagine they're reaching out to their players when people are reaching out to them trying to get their money back from season tickets and the reps won't answer the phone.
Right.
Jonah, we appreciate it, my man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll stick with the Daily of Memphian theme. Chris Harrington joins us to give his thoughts on the new additions to the Memphis Grizzlies front office. Stick around. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Chris Harrington, of course, writes for the Daily Memphian. He joins us each and every day during the start of the second hour of the program. Brad, let's fire the segment up.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris, I know what we're listening to, but for those that don't, what are we listening to?
A little Memphis Does Motown. That's Otis Redding's version of the Temptations song, It's Growing. Every little day it grows a little more. That's in tribute to the Grizzlies front office, which grew a little more yesterday and is apparently going to continue to do so in the coming days and weeks.
All right, I'll start first here with you. I'll ask the same question that I asked Jeff. What did you like about the hires and what did you dislike about the hires, if there was anything?
I like it more the more I think about it, the more I talk to people, really. You know, they had boxes that needed to be checked, and I think they checked two of them last night. I don't think they're done. In fact, they are not done. I was told there will be more hires, plural. You know, we'll see what happens with those. I don't think they filled every need that they had, but I think they filled a couple of them. If you look at the way the front office was when the shuffling happened on Thursday, you know, you still had, they retained their scouting director, Chris Makris. And so like the traditional scouting apparatus was still in place and you had someone managing that. They retained Tayshaun Prince and Chantal Hazard, who are the people sort of day to day closest to players and coaches, the people who are in the players lounge and in the locker room and on the practice court and all that. So they maintained that. But when they moved Hollinger to, you know, the more advisory role, they didn't have anyone sort of managing their analytics data. That was a box that they needed to recheck. And they didn't really have sort of an experienced old hand with sort of deep relationships in the league, which is what Ed Stefanski had before he left, what Chris Wallace had for better or worse, like that was gone. And so they checked that box of Glenn Grunwald. And so the way I see it, I think if you look back at Rich Cho's record in Charlotte and briefly in Portland. I mean, there's a reason for a lot of skepticism about him running an organization, but he's not running an organization. He's running their data and analytics department of the organization. And that seems to honestly, from everything I can tell and people I talk to, that's what he should be doing for an NBA team, not being the GM, but running a certain section of the organization. He seems well suited to managing the information systems, data, analytics, research, that kind of thing. He seems to be in the right position that he should be in, not running an organization. And the Glenn Grunwald thing, the reports on him, when I talk to people around the league who I know, who I trust, the reports on Showa are somewhat mixed. The reports on Glenn Grunwald are uniformly like, this guy's great, right? They're very positive. And one person I talked to, I think, made a great point. He said, you know, the operating in the NBA is about relationships and about trust with people in other organizations.
Sure.
And given the relatively limited experience on basketball stuff that Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman have, they naturally come in at a deficit in that regard. And if used properly, Grunwald's going to be essential to helping ease those relationships and help make those connections around the league. He's someone who everyone in the league knows and everyone has a high regard for, and he can easily reach across to different organizations and communicate with people and help build those relationships on behalf of Zach Kleiman, on behalf of the new front office. And so if used effectively, I think he can be really important. So I think those are needs they needed to fill, and I think they filled them with people who are well-suited to those particular jobs, right? And people who have a lot of operational experience across time and across different franchises in the NBA, which I think they needed in the context of Wexler and Kleiman. I also think, you know, this could go, you could see this positively or negatively. It's definitely still a sense of, like, you know, relationship based, right?
Sure.
Like it's not an accident that these two guys were hired, or two guys that Kleiman worked with as an intern and maintain a relationship with from his internships at those organizations. Like, that's not an accident. But I think that's sort of just the way the NBA works, right? Like
I think it's the way business works.
When Jason Levien came in and he put Stu Lash as his main basketball guy, it wasn't because he did a search around the league. So Stu Lash was his guy, right?
Yes.
When Chris Wallace was hired, he inherited the Bronings, but he brought in Kenny Williamson, the Eggman, because that was his guy, who he had a relationship with, right? That's sort of the way it works. And so at least, like, the guys he has this relationship with are, like, guys who have had high-level jobs at multiple organizations. It's
right.
Not, like, just your buddy off the street, right? Like, these are, like, serious people. But I also think that Kleiman in particular probably needs experienced people around him, but he needs experienced people who are going to, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt and be willing to work for him and not have that skepticism you might have if you're just brought in, you know, cold. And so I think having people, A, of stature, but B, people of stature who actually already know him and have enough faith in him to come work with him, is probably ultimately the best thing he could have done in that regard. You know, I think it would have been riskier for him to hire some commensurate person to Rich Cho or Glenn Grunwald that he does not have a pre-existing relationship with. And so given the needs they had to fill, I think these are good hires.
Do you feel like those that would say, okay, yeah, these are experienced hires, but yet again, this is just another example of the Grizzlies playing musical chairs and then changing titles?
Here's what I would say to that. Yeah, it's sort of weird. It's sort of odd that they were both consulted. I kick myself for not knowing ahead of time.
No, I actually said the same thing to Jeff, for me.
But no one did. Like, literally no one did.
Yeah.
That they had been consulted during the season. Now, we knew that before. I got it confirmed last night, but I knew it before it got confirmed because Jeff found the story in a Toronto paper that sort of said the Grunwald thing. And actually, I don't think many people noticed. I actually was in my car listening, and I noted it. Bobby Marks said in passing on this radio
yep.
station that Cho had been consulting. I don't think that really got noticed, but he said that. And so I my antenna went up when he said that. And so, yes, they were doing some level of consulting work back during the season. On the Rich Cho thing, it really seemed to be, like, I don't think they were not in the offices, they were not in the meetings, they were not on trade calls. I don't think they were involved in day-to-day operations and day-to-day transactional stuff. With Rich Cho, it really seemed to be like doing a research project. Like it almost seemed to be job prep for the job he was going to have, and maybe they knew he was going to have it, right? It was like, let's look at best practices around the league and make some recommendations about the way we should operate going forward. It was more macro, not sort of micro. But the impression I get is not, oh, it's all the same people, they rearrange the titles. What the impression I get from it is that the change, the real change, was more gradual than sudden. It wasn't like on Thursday afternoon, boom, they changed everything. Is that there was a process of changing it maybe over the last few months. And this is the culmination of what was a gradual process, not some sudden decision on Thursday.
So if this is the first real moves that we've seen, the new front office, if you will, the new, you know, the new team of Wexler and Kleiman, overall, if, you know, if you're putting it on a 1 to 10 scale, 1 being the least positive, 10 being the most positive, where do you think it falls?
So tell me what I'm judging again? Just so, the moves they've made since Thursday, or the whole thing in total?
Correct. The whole we'll say if Thursday began the climate.
So we set a 4 yesterday or the day before, and I'll bump it up to a 5 now. Like,
okay. then I'm good.
Right.
Because I keep, like, I don't want to be like Mr. Cynic, Mr. Negative,
right.
Like in general. Like, I want to be fair. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know how you can. People that.
Oh, I feel better about it today than I did yesterday, but there's still rampant reason for skepticism.
Yes.
And so I'll bump it to a 5, right?
Yes.
5. That's not a, like, you know, let's start the parade. Like, they got, it's all good. But I do feel better about it today than I did yesterday. I think these are people who have a lot of experience. They are generally well regarded, and I think they have been put in the right positions for who they are. You know, it's not, hey, here's my law school buddy. I'm gonna make him director of analytics, right? It is a guy who has a lot of experience across multiple good organizations generally. Like, he was in Oklahoma City for a long time, and seems to have. When you read up on Rich Cho and you talk to people, what you get is, you know, he's not maybe the greatest communicator, like, face-to-face, and, like, that's sort of a problem if you're leading an organization, but, like, he's a really smart guy. What I get, someone even said this to me directly last week when I was asking Rich Cho, who knows him and knows everyone involved, and said he's sort of a more experienced Hollinger. And so he's sort of replacing Hollinger operationally. And Grunwald is sort of replacing Ed Stefanski, what Ed Stefanski was, like, a year ago.
Right.
So in some ways, that's a similar structure of different people. If you want to say that, like, Zach Kleiman has sort of replaced Chris Wallace, I think what they're missing still, and maybe they're missing multiple things, but I think one thing they're missing still is another person, and I would hope it would be someone in a the same level as Rich Cho, but we'll find out. I think they need another person in the office day to day who is more of a traditional pro personnel kind of guy, right?
Sure.
Because they still don't have the quote unquote basketball guy. Grunwald is that. But in the office, you know, Wexler, Kleiman, Cho, even Cho, 20 years of experience, is still, like, he's the engineer, lawyer.
Type. Right, he's the analytical.
Right.
Like,
and
this
so
is...
I still think there's a missing component of, you know, quote-unquote traditional basketball pro personnel guy to have a prominent role in their offices, and that's the box I would like to see them still check.
Yes, because I think inevitably...
And maybe promoting Tayshaun Prince does that. I mean, I've had people suggest to me, like, I think
is his role, yeah.
That they're going to promote him. But I think if they were going to do that, they would have done it when they put out that press release last week.
Right, because he's already here.
Yeah.
And to me, that doesn't make any sense when we're, if that isn't the case. Okay, you mentioned Hollinger, and I was confused last week because the way that it was released, it made it seem like Hollinger was being essentially...
Yeah, well, I can clarify that a little bit.
Okay.
And I tweeted about it last week, and I blame myself. My tweet was a little misleading, and some people, like, took it the wrong way. We actually talked about this on the Daily Memphian podcast yesterday, but I'll do it again here today. And so the Hollinger thing is still somewhat to be determined. But what I can tell you about that is when the release first came out, like, Chris Wallace and John Hollinger have been reassigned. I think what most people, their first reaction to that, and my first reaction to it was, well, or before I remembered something that I knew, the first reaction is, well, these guys are still under contract, so you're like, just like Chris Wallace, when Jason Levin came in, you, like, give him some different title and send him away,
right.
And like, until the contract runs out. So you gotta pay him anyway, so whatever,
exactly.
Give him some title. I think that's what the assumption for people is.
Yes.
And that may or may not be the case with Chris Wallace. That I'm not sure about. But I knew before then that Hollinger's contract was about to run out. It was going to run out this summer. I had heard that he was done in July, and it was a question of whether they would bring him back. And so when I saw that, it was weird to me because, like, why are you giving a guy a new title if he's going to be gone in July anyway? And what I found out was that Hollinger and the new front office or whatever, like, they talked about it, and they mutually agreed to extend their relationship in a new position. They could have just let him walk in July, and they chose not to, and he chose not to. And so they asked him, will you stay on in this advisory role? You can work from home. It is a lesser reduced role, but will you stay with the organization past the end of this current contract? And he agreed to do so. Both sides elected to do that. Now, what that means operationally, my sense is that's still to be determined. The rest of this may shake out, and it may mean a lot. It may mean very little. I think that even with that extension of that relationship, if something pops up in another organization or media-wise or whatever that he would rather do, I think they'll let him go, and like they'll let him out of whatever contract he has, and he'll go do it. But that was not a ceremonial title because he was still on the payroll.
Right. In terms of the impact or the influence that he had, because to me it always seemed unclear of how much impact John Hollinger actually had, because his name was never really attached to certain moves. But then you would talk to certain people, particularly behind the scenes, and they would say, well, he's had a lot of influence on a lot of moves, and none of them were all that productive. But at the same time, it's like that wasn't good enough to report. So I was always kind of unclear on how much influence he had. In your opinion, how much influence did he have?
I think it varies, like move to move, thing to thing. My sense was he was probably more impactful. I think on some player situations, he was more involved and some not. I think broadly speaking, it was more about strategizing around cap stuff and, like, you know, what's the best way to structure this deal to get the best, you know, trade exception and a lot of that kind of sort of detail-oriented stuff, maybe around the cap. I think move by move, like, it just varies. I mean, the sense, like, look at some of these second-round picks. I mean, the sense I think people have is like, well, Deonta Davis, that was the Ed Stefanski guy. And Roddy Zagorotz, that was a Hollinger guy.
Yeah.
And Javon Carter, well, that's a Chris Wallace guy. I think that might be true on all of those. But there's the sense of, like, you know, in different circumstances, different people were sort of influential.
Yes, and so I guess the larger question is,
I think if you go back to Hollinger, to me the real question is, how much did he impact, you know, building a structure with their analytics stuff? And it seems like not as much as maybe they hoped when they hired him.
Right,
and that's why with Rich Cho, I think the hope is he is much more experienced. He didn't come out of media. He is much more experienced with NBA front offices, and can he more effectively sort of build systems and structures? I think Hollinger became more of a personnel advisor and a transactional advisor and less of a managing a staff around analytics. And I think the hope with Cho is he's more of an internal building systems, you know, coming up with computer programs that are used for different purposes and more hands-on kind of stuff, which is what teams in the NBA do.
Right.
It seems like the Grizzlies did not make the advances in that regard that maybe they had hoped to.
How much do you feel like the next major move that'll occur will be a coach? Or I guess the bigger question is, how much urgency is there on hiring a coach?
I'm reluctant to say anything because it could be a Woj bomb any second. That's sort of the way it works.
Well, I mean, that's the way that we've come to deal with this team.
I would be surprised if there was a coaching hire soon. I think there will be more front office hires before there's a coaching hire. And so I'd be very surprised if there was a coaching hire, you know, certainly the rest of this week or even next week. Will it happen before or after the lottery? I think that's a big question. I think we've talked about this yesterday on different shows. I think there's a real reason to not do it until the lottery. But I don't know if that's what they have in mind. But I would suspect you will see more front office hires, maybe plural, before you see a coaching hire.
To me, that stands to reason, because at the same time, like, you know, what if the Thunder end up partying with Billy Donovan and there's, you know, there's still a lot of fallout that could occur after the playoffs. So to me, it seems like there's not as much urgency on getting that job done. But Jeff mentioned this, and I wanted to ask you about it because we've kind of touched around it. The idea that, you know, we're at this point now, like, we're just waiting on a Woj bomb at any moment. The fact that Cho and Grunfeld were
advisors.
That's,
or,
not, that's not exactly a Grizzly specific thing, by the way. That's like an, that's like an NBA thing.
Well, yeah. that's and so that was my larger question: is did they become, because honestly, it's more of a sports, it's more of a sports franchise thing. Like, having covered an SEC football program, this is just status quo. So right. I was completely used to this manner, but. My question is, when Jeff was discussing the openness in which they used to be with this, did it change when ownership changed to Para, or did it even change during Para's tenure? So, like, at the initial...
Oh, I think it's primarily an ownership thing.
Yeah.
Michael Heisley was, like, would come on radio shows and yell and scream at people and, mm-hmm. like, you know...
Respect.
And so, So Michael Heisley was, like, very open and, like, whatever... And Para, like, is very tight in terms of the number of people he communicates with, and obviously in terms of his public communication, which is very, very, very minor. And I think there's probably a sensitivity to not wanting, you know, to wanting to follow that lead and not sort of get on Para's – I think – I'm sort of stumbling over it, but to me it descends from the personalities of the owners.
Right.
And to me that is the primary dividing point in sort of – how buttoned up or not buttoned up or how or the way the Grizzlies have communicated this organization, to me, the ownership change is the primary change there.
Is the idea of, let's be real, primarily using Adrian Wojnarowski as your mouthpiece, is the idea that you're able to get one consistent message and you're able to control it and your side of the story comes from them?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to generalize about
sure.
that. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, I think we assume every time there's a story that Woj has that, I mean, I think a lot of people assume that it is a strategic leak by the team.
Plant, yes.
I think a lot of times that's the case. I don't think that's always the case.
No, Adrian's actually also turns out a very good reporter in general.
And has sources with, like, agents and
yes.
with other people. And so I don't assume in every single circumstance it is a strategic leak by team management. I think sometimes it is. And so I don't, you know, I'm reluctant to publicly generalize on that.
That's more than fair. I'm more in the uncareful business. And then on to the playoffs. Let's go to last night.
There were games last night?
Allegedly. There were...
I was busy writing about Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald.
Unbelievable bad beat.
I didn't miss much, though.
By the way, if you had Indiana last night plus eight, you need a hug. Because that was one of the worst ways to... It ends up pushing.
Turns out the Celtics are good.
But Boston basically never led the entire night until the end. Yeah. Like, it was...
Right.
It was just such an unbelievable way to see a game go down. And then, really, I guess the bigger question is, moving on from that, in terms of biggest threats, who do you think... Who has impressed you more through their first-round matchups that haven't been all that interesting, Milwaukee or Houston?
I'd have to say Houston, just because with the Milwaukee thing, I mean, Milwaukee has looked great all season, and they
right.
still look great. Like, all the fundamentals would tell you they're the best team in the NBA, other than, like, the fact that you look at Golden State and you see the players on the floor.
Right.
But they're playing a really, really bad – they are not playing – they're playing a playoff series against a non-playoff team.
Yes.
Detroit without Blake Griffin is not – is nowhere close to a playoff team.
No, it's a 25-win team.
Yeah, and so I can't put much stock into that at all. With the Houston thing, I can't decide whether to be more impressed with Houston or more disappointed in Utah, and I think it's maybe strongly both.
Yeah.
Like, but Utah is a real team, and I think they're underperforming, but I think Houston just looks good, like maybe as good as they did last year in the playoffs. And so I think Houston has moved into – if you make a list of teams that could win the title this year, I think it's four. And I think Houston, as a four seed in the West, is one of those four teams.
And the other two being Toronto and Milwaukee?
Yeah, and Golden State.
Golden State, right. Obviously, being the obvious. So Toronto tonight, again, they go to Orlando. After losing game one, they looked like exactly like we would expect in game two.
I think they're going to sweep it out at this point.
Yeah, I just,
we'll see. Maybe that'll look dumb too. Because I said Oklahoma City might come back in game two, and it looks like Oklahoma City's broken. Looks like Westbrook and George just aren't their real selves, and so that's not going to happen. But I think Toronto is going to roll over Orlando going forward.
Last question, because we mentioned perhaps fallout. How good of a job do you think Billy Donovan's done as Oklahoma City's head coach?
I think he's done okay. I mean, I wouldn't have him on my bad job list. I certainly don't have him on a fairly lengthy, like, Coach of the Year candidate list.
Right.
So I think he's somewhere in the broad middle of, like, NBA coaches who've generally performed up to what they have to work with.
Replacement level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like yeah. He doesn't strike me as someone.
Right, he doesn't hurt. He doesn't help.
Like, yeah. If he gets fired tomorrow, I wouldn't say, you got to go swoop up that guy.
Right.
I would say, yeah, he'll probably get another shot somewhere.
Chris, we appreciate it.
All right.
When we come back, we'll get into the NFL schedules, which have been released. Stick around. You'll listen to the Jeff Calkins Show right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, a couple of notes to discuss. Jeff Calkins is going to join us momentarily to get some NFL schedule thoughts. But, Brad, I also wanted to, before we go down the NFL scheduling path, I also wanted to quickly discuss two things that I've been curious about.
Okay.
Have we officially reached the point where it feels like now with any time the Grizzlies do anything, it almost feels like, and maybe this is just a social media reaction, mm-hmm. and maybe it's just because of the platform that I see it, but it just feels like every move they make now, good or bad, everyone just rolls their eyes.
Yeah, I think we've reached a point where every move they make is important to the franchise, right? Because the moves that we heard about yesterday are significant because it affects the whole structure of the front office, what happens on draft day, presumably, what direction you go with the trades with Mike Conley. So it's pretty much landmark decisions, both on the business side. Well, not so much on the business side because Wexler is staying at the top there. But with the basketball side, and I don't think we've got clarity yet, as Chris really did a nice job explaining there. There's more coming. And so last night was strange. To me, as an outsider and as a fan, in my office, as I put it on the site last night, it just seemed like a little bit more of the same because you had a guy who was in a business relationship with one of the guys they added to the front office in Cho, who he worked with the Hornets. And then you had the director of basketball from Canada being added to the fold, who he also had a relationship with. And then we find out later that they've already been part of the front office. There is, I think, a component of the fans out there. There's a group of fans out there. Like my friend Taylor last night, we were talking about this. And he sort of rolls his eyes because he doesn't think they've really made any changes. And I think that's important to note here because you're sort of reshuffling the deck chairs. You have a lot of guys who've already been involved with the franchise, but we don't have clarity on, is anything really different?
Right. And to...
I thought Jeff's analogy about you becoming the program director of this station and me staying in the fold was a good one because it would, on the outside, people don't understand what that means. On the inside, it completely makes sense. So those are two different things. There's a perception of what's going on the outside. Have things really changed? And then there's the reality inside the organization, which is, yeah, they probably have.
See, where I think it's a little different, where the example that I would use is, consulting in the corporate world happens all the time,
mm-hmm.
in yeah. which you have whether or not you pay. I mean,
right.
For at the end of the day, accountants largely mm-hmm. are consultants.
Yep,
they're consulting you
yeah.
on
the difference with this particular business is it's a sports franchise, and sports franchises have players, and we only see what the roster is.
Well, what I think the bigger difference is yes, you're right. It's a sports business, but also. I think the bigger difference is everyone kind of has scar tissue that's a Grizzlies fan.
Yeah, sure.
I think what happens is and you're right.
I think that's a good point.
You're right on this point in that it seems like it's an important period because it's clearly a transitional period.
Sure.
You've had this one way of doing things for an extended period, even when you've been
shuffling in and out coaches, there's still kind of been these constants.
Yeah.
What I do think, my only question of whether or not, like, on the questions of importance, like, is this an important time? Well, anytime you rebuild your team, it becomes, you know what I mean? Like, so for instance, the reason why I say, like, does this, is this time any more important than others? It's like, well, clearly you're in a restructuring moment because you've been losing basketball games.
Well, something that fans, the average fan looks at what just happened and they go, why didn't they just fire Hollinger and Wallace? But on the inside, there's probably systems in place that Chris talked about. There's draft analysis that's taken place. There's analytics that may have been developed that they need to further develop with Cho coming in. So those are things we don't understand as fans because we don't get to see the day-to-day operations. And it's a little different because we have an owner who's silent on the process.
Well, there's no question, and he clearly, at least from my vantage point, he clearly is influential on decisions. And sure. I don't just mean, whether or not we're putting the wing guru in VetX form.
Sure, clearly. Well, and I think that's something that Wexler's done a really good job with, which is the marketing aspect of it, the branding, the partnerships they have with different businesses that are in the forum, and clearly they've done a good job with that. I think that seems pretty obvious.
I guess my overarching point
would be... It's a different part of the business. Go ahead.
Sorry. Correct. No, it's obviously... that's in-game marketing. That's other ways to make revenue. Mm-hmm. What I think... And I don't think... Yes, obviously.
And Wexler says that that's what I focus on. You know, I'm part of the basketball operations.
Correct.
But my focus is on the business side. I'm not sitting here, evaluating players like, day-to-day stuff.
Correct. And while I'm not going to dismiss that role, inevitably what everyone is upset about one way or the other is the result of the basketball team.
Right.
No one is truly upset about the experience that he or she has walking into FedEx Forum.
Right.
Good or bad. Improvements or not. Like, the larger point being, if the team was winning, the game day experience wouldn't be discussed one way or the other. Like, you know what I mean?
I think that's true. I think this is a very nuanced conversation in the sense that when Chris talked about the deal they did with Bruno Caboclo and the fact that there's an option for them to get out
Correct.
Of deals like that. That's where Kleiman's experience and the opportunity lies, as opposed to just give them a 2-year deal. You know, so they've done a better job in some of those deals.
Correct. The larger point though that I'm making is the reason why people are upset is not the structuring of the business model. The reason why people are upset is because of the structuring of the roster and the fact that this team went from being a winning basketball team seemingly overnight. The guys that they loved were shipped out of town. Two of the four,
right.
The guys that they love are shipped out of town. They bring in a guy that they give a guy $94 million that was clearly injured. There's all these frustrations. And so when you're saying like it's an important time, like I agree with you because it's clearly a crossroads time because you have significant decisions to make. What do you do with Mike Conley?
Yeah.
And there's also...
And who's making those decisions?
Correct.
How does the chain of command look?
Correct. But my larger point is, like, this is just what happens when your team starts losing.
Yeah, and the problem from a talk radio perspective, Jeffrey, is that we have 4 weeks of this. We have to wait until the NBA lottery on the 14th, 15th. And so we're not going to really... I would imagine we won't have a coaching decision until after that because that could influence who your coach is.
I think there's likely perspective. Okay, yeah. Something we don't have to wait for is the NFL schedule, and we no longer have to wait to bring Jeff Calkins back. Okay, Jeff, I know has told me that he has some questions for me. So now that we welcome back Jeff Calkins to the program, Jeff, fire away.
Are the Buffalo Bills the least interesting team in the league? Because they are the one team that does not have, my beloved Buffalo Bills, a primetime game. Now, they do have a game on Thanksgiving.
Correct.
They play Dallas on Thanksgiving, and I guess you could count that. But technically speaking, when you look at what people call primetime games, the Bills are the one team in the league that does not have them. And I just refuse to believe they're the least interesting team in the league. But who is less interesting? The Dolphins are less interesting. What the hell is interesting about the Dolphins? The Bills at least have Josh Allen. A coach isn't interesting unless it's... I mean, Gruden is interesting. Gruden was interesting as a coach, right?
Correct.
I don't think there's any... What the hell is interesting about the Dolphins?
I guess here would be the question: is does Bruce Arians fit your category of interesting coach? Because I think the Bucs are pretty boring too.
Yeah, they're kind of boring. But you got Jameis. Jameis is, I think he's interesting. A little bit.
No, I do agree with you. I think the Dolphins are definitely.
Well, I guess the Cardinals will be interesting if they.
Well, the Cardinals are interesting because they have unsuccessful college coach as their. Presumably they're going to have Kyler Murray.
And the number one pick in the draft. So they would therefore become interesting.
How are the Bengals interesting? New coach, I guess.
How the hell are the Bengals interesting? At this point, why are the Lions interesting?
They're not. I mean, I guess they're interesting only in the sense that they typically score a lot of points. They're kind of the kings of garbage time.
Why are the Redskins interesting?
They're not.
I mean, aren't the Bills more interesting? Josh Allen is at the very least interesting, and I'm not actually. I tend to not be a.
No, you're still. You are still cynic. You're still skeptical at best about him.
I bury the Bills. I don't defend the Bills, but I don't think they're the least interesting team in the league now, honestly. And they got no. And they have no. Yeah, no primetime games. Here's a question for you. You remember that recently the Bills and Titans faced off in a poll.
Correct.
An online poll about who had better fans.
Correct.
Okay? And as you recall, the Bills were cheated out of the victory.
Of course.
Because they were leading up until 1 minute before the poll ended, and all of a sudden Titans fans bought enough votes to surge ahead of the Bills.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Bills play at Nashville. What percentage of that stadium will be Bills fans?
I will say.
I think a quarter.
God, that's high, Jeff, for an NFL game?
A fifth, then. It's going to be overrun. I'm telling you, it's going to be overrun. I may actually go to hang out with my fellow Buffalonians. How early is it, though? Of course, some of this is will the Titans be good at this point?
Correct.
If they stink, Titans fans will be unloading their and Bills fans will buy them up, right?
Correct. So it is October the 6th, so that it'll be the...
It's pretty early.
Fifth game of the year.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little early for Titans fans to be bailing out.
Here's the Titans first. Here are the Titans' first games, the first four before the Bills, at the Browns,
and they're 5-point underdogs. Yeah,
Colts at home.
They lose that. They always lose to the Colts. Yep.
At the Jaguars.
That's a tough one. I think Jaguars will be better.
It's a Thursday night game. It's the Thursday night game in Jacksonville.
Yep. I think you could easily see 0-3 at this point.
At the Falcons, they'll have 10 days of rest, and then they get the Bills. Holy cow! It is not insane to say the Titans would start 0-4.
They won't, though.
No, they won't. But I'm just saying, odds say they will not start 0-4. But that's a schedule that you can go, oh my god,
you could start 0-4,
right?
Speaking, by the way, of rivalry games, I mean, we got the Bills at the Titans, but we also have week two, Jeffrey.
Oh, boy, do we.
I hope you circled this.
Oh, boy.
Bills-Giants.
Who couldn't think? And
Bills-Giants. Do we have a line on that already?
Let's see. But the Bills are better favored. The Bills have a higher win total.
I bet the Bills are favored by 1.5.
I bet they would be, too. Someone was asking me what my expectations are this year.
It's at the Meadowlands. Giants haven't figured out much, right?
No. If anything, they have punted on this year.
Right. I mean, the most conspicuous team that has punted on this year is the Dolphins. They're clearly tanking this year. The Dolphins are tanking. The Giants, yeah, it's unclear. So we have that one circled. All right. Do you think the Bills got screwed?
Do I think the Bills?
No prime time?
Not particularly, because when it
I don't either. I honestly don't even care about prime time.
Yeah,
I like a prime time game if it's in Buffalo. It's kind of fun because you get to see your city and stuff. But what a primetime does often is screw up the schedule, well, particularly if it's a Thursday night game. You don't want that. Like, you know, who wants that? No one wants that.
You and I have talked about this.
Monday night games, same thing. I actually think having no primetime games is an advantage in terms of W's and L's.
I hate having, especially when my team's not good, I legitimately hate having them play in primetime because my team is this, like, lightning conductor for takes. And
well, you just hate seeing Eli crushed all the time.
Well, it's not, but it's less about that. It's more of just, I hate when people that only watch a team play once come in and, well, this is the problem. And it's like, it only happens in national primetime games. Put me at noon in the middle of a regional schedule and let me die in peace.
Give me the, here's another question for you. Give me the Titans. We do have the Titans faithful out there. Give me the, go take me through the Titans record. We have them. What will they be? That's the question. What will the Titans, what will they be at the end of the year? They're our home team. They're everybody's home team here. What are they going to be at the end of the year? We just said they could start 0-4. You're not going to say they are going to start 0-4, are they? Are you?
No, I'm not going to say they start 0-4.
You're going to say they're 1-3, and then they beat the Bills at home. You're going to say that, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then they're 2-3. Let's carry on.
So, 2-3, okay.
Pull up the Titans schedule.
See what the rest of the schedule looks like here for the Titans. I'm surprised.
So, then they would go, okay, so they open with, after the Bills, they go to the Broncos. I'm going to say loss.
Broncos is a loss.
All right, so that's 2-4, right?
Yeah. Yep.
2-4. Then we've got Chargers at home. I'll give them that game because when the teams go west to east, it's traditionally been very difficult. All right, then they get the Buccaneers at home. I'll give them that. Yeah, so we're now at 4-5, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
At the Panthers. So that's a loss. It's 4-6. Chiefs and Titans. They're not going to be favored.
No, that's a loss.
7, and then they get the Jags at home.
Win.
Division games at home. At the Colts, loss.
Loss.
Raiders win. Yeah, the Raiders
are
win.
Are they at the Raiders?
It's at Oakland, but who cares at this point? Like that, at that point, the Raiders will be checked out, done.
Okay.
I'll say the split the Texans game.
All right.
And then they get the Saints at home. That team reeks of 8-8 and 7-9.
Disappointing.
The team reeks of 8-8 or 7-9.
Disappointing.
I mean, I think the win total's probably, if you made me guess, the win total's 8.5.
All right, Jeff had to jump off, so.
Yeah, so many thanks again to Jeff for joining us. We come back. The one story you've been waiting for, Jerry Stackhouse, former Grizzlies assistant, has made some news. We'll tell you what that is when we come back right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 99.5 ESPN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.